Today on Maine Calling, Lost on a Mountain in Maine, coming to the silver screen. If you grew up in Maine, you know the story and probably read the book in school. Lost on a Mountain in Maine tells the story, in his own words, of 12-year-old Don Fendler surviving 9 days alone on Katahdin in 1939. Now, 85 years later, Lost on a Mountain in Maine is a major motion picture. Produced by Sylvester Stallone's production company, the film opens nationwide this weekend. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, the enduring impact of this story. We'll meet Ryan Cook, a Maine native who worked for years on this project, the movie's director, Andrew Keitlinger, and one of Don Fendler's nephews, Michael Fendler. Did you ever meet Don Fendler? What does his story mean to you? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth. From investments to trustee services, more at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Lost on a Mountain in Maine tells the story of 12-year-old Don Fendler, who in 1939 was lost on Katahdin for 9 days and survived. Perhaps you met Don Fendler. Thousands did, as he visited schools regularly for more than 20 years. His true story is now a major motion picture, opening in theaters this weekend. We're going to learn more about what happened and how the movie portrays it. Joining me, Ryan Cook, who worked to produce this film for more than a decade, Andrew Keitlinger, who is director of the movie, and we're also hoping to hear from Michael Fendler, Don Fendler's nephew. We invite you to join the conversation. Did you ever read the book? Did you ever meet Don? Did you get to see the premiere of the movie in Waterville at the Maine International Film Festival? Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to both of you. I know it's a really busy week for you, so really appreciative that you've carved out an hour for us today.
This is a highlight, so thank you. I'm excited.
Ryan, the producer credit is going to Sylvester Stallone, whose company produced this film, but you have been working on this project for a long time. I remember interviewing you and Don Fendler on the TV show Maine Watch in 2011. You had just completed a documentary about his story, and you were trying to raise money for a film. And I had to giggle when I listened to it because you were using a newfangled concept at the time called Kickstarter. But I wanted to play a clip. Here's what Don Fendler said in 2011.
Every place I go, I'm asked, when are they going to make a movie? And now I think there's a chance, a good chance, that it will be done. I think it's going to make a good movie. And the theme will be, I'm sure, what faith and determination can do.
So, Ryan, talk about tenacity. Tell us, why was this project so important to you? Tell us how you met Don Fendler and why you were so committed to this film.
Sure, yeah. I mean, that's a throwback. That was 2011, you said? I mean, that's just... I'm your classic story of a fourth grader who grew up in Maine, and we read the book in fourth grade, and Don came to our class. So I met Don when I was 10, 11 years old, and the story really stuck with me, obviously. And when I graduated film school from Emerson College in Boston in 2009, I sort of was thinking about what I wanted to do with my life and what I wanted to do with my career. And the Lost on a Mountain in Maine story and Don's story was top of mind for me. And I had the same question everybody else has asked. It was like, why hasn't this been made into a movie? And that's when I first started on this journey with my producing partner, Derek, reaching out to Don and saying, all right, how do we get this to happen? I didn't think it would take 14 years to get to that point, but along the way, there's a lot of ups and downs, obviously, through the process. But we often thought about Dawn, taking one step at a time, going through the woods, and that's how we approached getting this film made as well. And so we're very excited and elated to have not only made the movie, but finally be at the point where we're getting to share it with everybody.
Andrew, how did you become involved in the project as director, and what drew you to it?
Well, I became involved through just a very classic, at first kind of boring interview process where they were just grilling me about who I was and my leadership acumen and my vision for the movie. But then Ryan, being Ryan, flew me out to Northern Maine, and my final kind of test to get the job was to climb Katahdin. So that's how I landed the job. And I must say, just like Don, I underestimated. I remember planning to show up in sneakers, and Ryan's like, no. And he sent me a long list of like outdoors equipment. I'm like, Ryan, this is $1,000 worth of stuff I have to buy here, but I'm so glad I did it because that mountain's tough. Climbed it a couple times now. And as far as what drew me to the story, it's about something I think that's very elemental and needs to be kind of, people need to be reminded of it. It's about hope, it's about family, it's about the power of community. We live in very noisy times right now, and I think the world needs to hear Don's story again.
Well, we're going to listen to a clip from the movie's trailer now.
We're going to the top.
We need to stick together!
I can't find the trail!
Dad! Where's Don?
I don't know.
Where's your brother?
100,000 acres of wilderness out there.
So damn focused. I'm trying to make him tough. I forgot to be his dad. I just hope to God we get one more chance.
We need volunteers. As many as you can send.
Oh boy, Andrew. Sounds like I'm going to need to bring tissues when I see it.
It was constructed to make people cry, and honestly, like the goals, when people leave the theater, they call their loved ones and tell them that they love them. That is my goal.
Oh my goodness. Michael, thank you for joining us. Michael Fendler, joining us in the middle of a family emergency. So thank you so much. You have seen the film as Don's nephew. What did you think of it, and what do you think Don would have thought? We lost him in 2016, of course.
Well, I loved it, and I thought it was a great movie. And congratulations to Andrew and Ryan, because I think they did just a fabulous job with it. It's hard to say what Don would have thought. He was so shy in many ways about taking credit for anything, and but he probably would have enjoyed the movie, but said, "Well, it wasn't exactly like that."
You guys are both laughing, Ryan and Andrew.
Well, I mean, trust me, I know full well, because when we, back in 2011, we had made this little proof of concept, to start up, try to gain some buzz for the movie and to raise some money. And we had shot a couple scenes, sort of sample scenes for the movie. And Don's main takeaway is that, well, back then game wardens didn't have beards. We had hired an actor that had a beard on his face. I said, Don, you're being very literal with, the most minute detail. So I think, for sure that Don's critiques would be ones that none of us would else, have thought about. But yeah, no, to have the support of the family, and Don's kids in particular were there at that screening in Waterville. It was just super special. I don't think I'll ever have a moment like that again, where you have, 800 people in a theater to from Don's family to people who read the book to, is a community that I grew up in Waterville, to have all those folks there together celebrating the movie. It was a really powerful evening.
And I poked around on the internet. It seems as though it's opening at a whole bunch of movies in theaters in Maine on Friday, with maybe one or two showings, and on Saturday, a whole bunch of showings.
Yeah, I think we are in almost every theater in Maine. And in fact, there's been a couple of theaters where they've been competing because they've been in the same area. Obviously, listen, this movie is going to be big in Maine, and we hope people love it. And for an independent movie, which is what we are, you know, getting a theatrical distribution is sort of unheard of these days. And we're going to be in close to 700 theaters nationwide. So we're really excited that the people of Maine get to see this movie and get to celebrate the film, but also that we're getting messages from people across the country who some know Don's story and some are being, you know, introduced to it for the first time. So to really open up his story to a wider audience is exciting for us.
Well, another Ryan is calling in. This is Ryan from the Strand Theater in Rockland. Hi, Ryan. Go ahead.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Just wanted to call in. I'm the programmer at the Strand Theater located in Midcoast, Maine, in Rockland, Maine. And as a Maine theater, like, we're really excited to bring a movie about Maine and a story from Maine to small Maine communities. Like, we've gotten requests from local schools, like, they want to bring their students here. We're just committed to adding, like, additional student matinees to bring this movie to our theater. And 'cause so many of them have read it in school. I mean, like, I did. Growing up here in the Midcoast, it was one of the most influential books that I read growing up here at South School in Rockland, Maine. And as the Strand was open, while like at the time that Lost on a Mountain, Maine was happening, when it took place, we opened our doors in 1923. We're just tirelessly working to get this film here in our theater.
Wow. Well, Ryan, thanks for calling in. You got some big smiles and thumbs up from Ryan and Andrew about bringing school kids to see the film. Thanks so much. Andrew, as I see the trailer, it seems to me that this is going to be kind of an old-fashioned adventure film, and not just old-fashioned because it's set in 1939. There's a feeling about it.
There is a feeling, and that's a feeling that I wanted to capture. I always say they don't make movies like this anymore, and they don't. PG-rated live-action family films. I was born and raised in Madagascar, which is like a weird little factoid about me. And the first movie I ever saw was E.T. when I was 5 years old. And E.T. gave me this feeling. You know, I didn't know what being a movie director was or really what a movie was at that point, but that the story just captured me. And there's something optimistic about it, right? Also something kind of scary about E.T., but optimistic and timeless. And I just knew with this film, when I read the script for the first time, I thought to myself, this has to be that type of film that's both nostalgic, but I hope 30 years from now, kids will watch it. I hope that a gym teacher who's sick and tired of teaching will just wheel it out into class and turn it on TV, you know, and like, oh, we're going to watch Lost in a Mountain in Maine. Here's a good, wholesome, educational movie. That's my goal. Like, then we've done something right.
Oh my gosh. As we mentioned, Ryan, Don Fendler died in 2016, but thanks to you, we have a lot of footage of him telling his story to school children as he did over and over again. We're going to listen to a clip now from your 2011 documentary, Finding Don Fendler.
The last day, I woke up and I looked out and I could see this body of water going by. I knew it had to be a river, too big to be a stream. So I got up, followed the stream, and into the river, and it turned out to be the east branch of the Penobscot. I took a right turn, and I started down the stream, and then all of a sudden, I looked up, and up on a knoll were these two cabins. Then I looked down at the riverbank, and there was a dock and a couple of canoes, and then I felt sure there had to be somebody there. I saw this tree had fallen into the water, and I climbed out on them, got in the branches, and started hollering. And Mrs. McMorrin told me later on that she heard this hollering, and Mrs. McMorrin was sleeping. She hollered at him, Nelson, go out and find out what that noise is. He said, oh, it's just a wild animal. Well, she finally convinced him, and he came out, and I saw him. And then he turned around and went back in, and I didn't think he saw me, and I passed out. He'd gone in to tell his wife to call Stacyville or Patton, where the ranger station was, or some station, to let them know that he had seen me, he knew who I was, and he was coming over to rescue me.
Of course, we're kind of giving away the end of the movie there, but really wonderful to hear Don's voice. And Michael, when you hear Don's voice, I see you just grinning ear to ear.
Yes, it was a great story. As a matter of fact, I just read the last two chapters of the book to a sixth grade class on Monday in Pittsfield, Maine. And after that, I showed an old 16 millimeter film clip of them moving him from the cabin where he was found down to Grindstone and meeting his mother in the water in a canoe. And practically everybody in the audience was kind of in tears.
Mm. We'll go to Patrick, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I'm glad to be on. I'm just calling because I have a strong attachment to this book, too. Back in 1976, I was going up for my trip, first trip to the Katahdin, and I went with Tom Bailey from Bangor. And as we were driving by a pond up there, he said, "Have you ever heard of Don Fenler?" And I said, "Of course, I read him when I was in grade school." Well, I'm almost 81 now. He said, "His brother has a cabin on this pond." And I casually said, "Did he ever make it come back and climb to the top?" Because I was, 35 at that time. And I remembered from when I was 8 reading that book that he turned around before he got to the top. And so I asked Tom that, and he said, "Well, I don't know." And Tom Bailey was one of these guys that gets things done. He was a neighbor of mine across the street, but about 3 months later, he called me and said, "Well, put in May 20th on your calendar because we're going to climb the mountain with Don Fenler." He had gotten a hold of him and found out that, no, he had never come back. So in 1977, we climbed to the there was probably 50 or more people by the time we got ready to climb. We all went up the night before. They had a big camp out and made the meals together. It was just a great, great thing. And then he did climb to the top, and then we had him out. I was teaching at Newburgh at the time, and he came out and spoke to our class. And as your speaker said before, he did a great job with the class. And we had 6 grades there, and every one of us either read it with our students or had our students read it before he got there. And he was there for about an hour and a half, and was fantastic.
Well, Patrick, thank you so much for calling and sharing that story. What a beautiful story. I really appreciate it. If you want to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. We're talking about the brand new major motion picture, Lost on a Mountain in Maine. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about the true story of Don Fenler, Lost on a Mountain in Maine, and how it has been turned into a major motion picture opening this week. With me, Andrew Boodoo Keitlinger, who is director of the movie, Ryan Cook, who worked for years and years to have it produced, and Michael Fenler, Don Fenler's nephew. You can share your comments and questions by email, talk@mainepublic.org. Please make them brief. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You know, Don Fenler didn't do everything right. He probably wouldn't have been lost on a mountain in Maine if he didn't get separated and go down the mountain himself. And there were a few other things. And Don was the first to admit it. Even though he'd been a Boy Scout, he did do several things wrong.
I was probably the scout in the back row when they were teaching us survival techniques, and I was goofing around and not paying attention. And for that matter, I paid for it. I paid the price.
And that's from a 2011 interview on Maine Watch here on Maine Public. Andrew, when you hear his voice, what do you think?
You know, I actually get rather emotional, especially on this program right now, because one of the bittersweet things about making this movie is I never got to meet him. You know, Ryan's been such a great steward of his legacy, and meeting his family and his descendants at the premiere was a beautiful thing. Michael, I don't know if it was you or somebody else that night. It was a whirlwind of a night, came up to me and said, "You captured his essence and what he wanted to convey to the world." And that meant everything to me. So it's really amazing to hear his voice, you know, and you actually see him in the movie, which I think people will find very special. There's some real life documentary footage of people involved in the 1939 search, and also Ryan Fendler and Ruth Fendler and Don himself that appear in the film throughout the movie as well. And I'm excited to hear what people think about that aspect.
Ryan, is it kind of bittersweet since you spent so much time with Don and worked so hard to have this made that he's not here to see it?
Yeah, it's, you know, I reflect fondly on all the time that Don and I got to spend together. And to be honest, most of the time what I'm reflecting on is time when we're not talking about Lost on a Mountain in Maine, where at a certain point after a while, I would just go up and have dinner with him, you know, and being able to spend, I mean, he was a childhood hero of mine. And I actually still have saved voicemails from him where he would call every Christmas and wish me a happy Christmas. So I still have those voicemails and I listen to him every once in a while. But the thing that sort of gives me solace right now is, you know, Don's favorite thing in the world was going to these events and speaking to people and hearing people's story. And, you know, I was in Portland last weekend with the Maine Historical Society and got to do a little presentation to a group of people. And I had the same experience where people were coming up to me and sharing their stories of when they read the book and when they met Don. And in that moment, I felt like, okay, I still feel like he's here, you know, in this room with me and living through the people of Maine. And that's something I hope that this movie will be able to carry the legacy on is, you know, he for 25 years went around the state and really made connections with people. And that's what he loved the most.
Michael, Don Fendler's most famous for something that happened when he was 12 years old. Tell us what he was like after that. What was his career? And did he continue to be a hero?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he did. That's interesting. He joined the Navy right at the very end of World War II and then left the Navy and went back to college and then was struggling to figure out what he wanted to do and then joined the Army. In a very short period of time, he was one of the original Green Berets in Vietnam. And while there, he earned two Bronze Stars for his heroism and received a couple of minor wounds. Most of the family thought they were quite serious. So he ended up having a long career and got out of the Army with a lieutenant colonel officer rank. And in general, had a very good career. But what he liked most was returning to Maine after he retired. And his biggest love, as Ryan just mentioned, was visiting schools and seeing children. That made him feel wonderful.
We'll go to David, who is calling from Florida. Hi, David, go ahead.
Hi, I'm not really calling from Florida. I am from Florida, but I spend my summers up in Maine, and I've summited Katahdin twice, so, and know Don's story, so I'm very interested in this. I understand, I guess my question is, I understand it's an independent movie or independent distribution. Streaming or anything?
Yeah, so, you know, as an independent movie, we're very lucky, like I said, to get theatrical. But we are going the standard. We're going to be in theaters all over the country for a couple weeks, hopefully. And then we will set up some streaming distribution deals further down the line, hopefully, probably after January 1st of this year. We want to make sure that we give the movie... Andrew did such an amazing job with this film. It deserves to be seen on the big screen. I can't tell you, when you see it in large format and especially hear the movie, the way that we captured, you know, obviously there's the soundtrack, but also just the sounds of the woods played a huge part. Andrew, I mean, if you want to speak to that, I think that the sound of this movie is really deserves to be full heard in full capacity.
We brought together an incredible team of artists to make this thing feel as immersive as possible. You know, you make a wilderness movie, a survival film. I think you know, this is not a spectacle-driven movie. It's an emotional epic is what I like to call it. You're really down in the dirt with Don the whole time. And so in order to make that feel immersive, you have to have this the very, very detailed soundscape. So we really paid attention to augmenting the bugs, and we need a loon in the distance, and we need a gust of wind here. And we just really wanted the audience to be there with him. So seeing in a cinema, the cinematography is stunning. You just go to the theater and see it, because that's why we made this movie.
David, thanks for your call. Joining us now is Lynn Plourd. She worked with Don Fendler to write the text of the graphic novel Lost Trail, 9 Days Alone in the Wilderness. Thanks for calling in, Lynn.
Sure thing, Jennifer. And hey to Ryan and to Michael. And nice to meet you, voice-wise, Andrew.
The graphic novel adds details to what was in the original book, the original Lost in a Mountain in Maine. Tell us how you were able to include what was going on before Don got lost.
It was important that Lost on a Mountain in Maine was a classic and still is. So it was important that Lost Trail, the graphic novel, had new information. So I spent a year and a half interviewing Don, writing the story, doing all the drafts, and it's like, well, how did he end up on top of Katahdin? And they were doing a fishing trip from Newport, Maine to Caribou, Maine, and wanted to hit every fishing spot along the way. And his good friend Henry Condon's like, oh, we're near Katahdin, let's climb it. And Don always used to say, I'll never forgive Henry for that. And I wanted to make sure we included things on the other end, and Michael was speaking to that in terms of Don continued to be a hero afterwards, and he got to go to the White House and got a medal for bravery from Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And another piece is that I wanted to make sure we included more about the rescue. And the movie does that, which is great, because Lost in a Mountain in Maine is Don's perspective, but what were all those searchers doing? So I read 1939 Bangor Daily newspapers, and there's faux newspaper clippings and telling what the searchers were doing each of those days.
All right. And Andrew, I'm going to turn to you just put a spotlight on this point that Lynn is making. The original book is really from Don's perspective, but there is a much broader perspective here.
Yeah, we using both, you know, the graphic novel, but also a lot of archival footage we had at disposal. The movie is an expansion of the story where we're also chronicling the relationship between parents and a child, and the relationship between Mr. Fendler and Don himself. And the movie, ultimately, I always say it's about a father and a son who are really trying just to say that they love each other. And it's about this boy that just wants a hug from his dad. And, you know, you can make a survival movie about a kid in the wilderness, but you have to have like a big why behind it. Why do people, should people come see this? And that's, I think, the family aspect of the movie is the why. It's about connection. It's about community coming together to help neighbors they don't know. And so that's why we expanded the movie to be this very universal communal experience.
Lynn, what would you like to build on of what was already said today, since you did get to work with Don Fendler on your book so closely? What do you want people to know about him?
He was a delight. I mean, I saw him the day before he passed away at the Bangor Hospital, and his wish was always to die in Maine, and he got his wish. I was still shocked, and I know Ryan was too, when Don passed. We sort of thought his story is immortal, and he would be immortal. And I went to countless school visits with him. I'd pick him up at his place in Newport. We'd drive to Arista County. 4 hours, he wouldn't stop talking. And he was just an amazing conversationalist and just told such wonderful stories. But the part that really stood out to me is every time we went to a school, Don wanted to talk to every kid. And they had to hold the buses because Don wanted to talk to every kid. He wanted to know what sports they were involved in, what activities. So we always turned it around, even though he had the heroic story. I think he was letting people know, you know what? I was a regular kid too, like you. Here's what happened to me. I wonder what will happen to you in the future.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for calling in. Lynn Plourd helped with the graphic novel, and more than helped, according to Don, Lost Trail, working with Don Fendler on that. Michael, there is a gift of gab in your family, isn't there?
I guess so.
You're going to say briefly to prove me wrong. We'll go to Aaron, who's calling from Belmont. Hi, Aaron. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thanks so much for hosting this conversation today. And thanks also to Ryan, Andrew, and Michael for being here today to talk. So it's not every day that the Maine Wilderness in Katahdin is featured on the big screen. And I really think this is a pretty special moment for our state. So I'm the director, executive director of Friends of Baxter State Park. And in addition to inspiring generations of people, you know, with his story, Don was an absolutely incredible ambassador for Baxter State Park. And by talking about Katahdin with tens of thousands of school kids, he really put the mountain on the radar for a lot of kids in Maine. And you know, growing up in Maine in the 90s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, you know, there were really two rites of passage. One was reading Lost on a Mountain in Maine, and the other was actually going up and climbing Katahdin yourself. And I really think Don just inspired so many people to visit Baxter State Park. So I wanted to put something on the radar for all of your listeners. Friends at Baxter State Park, we're going to be hosting a special one-night-only fundraiser showing of Lost on a Mountain in Maine next Friday, November 8th, and that's going to be at the Grand in Ellsworth. And Ryan, you're going to be there and joining us to speak about the film and answer questions from the audience afterward. So we're going to have a social hour starting at 6, film starts at 7, and then Ryan will speak afterward at about 8:30. And you can get tickets for that event on the Grand's website, grandonline.org. So this special Friends of Baxter showing is a great way to support Baxter State Park and also get to see this incredible movie. So again, Friday, November 8th, and you can get your tickets at grandonline.org. So I wanted to mention one other thing to your listeners, and that's that we do a special sign auction every fall of retired Baxter State Park trail signs. And that starts this coming Monday, November 4th. And this year, the auction actually includes some signs from the part of Katahdin where Don got lost, not far from where he got lost on the tableland. So for folks who are interested in the park and want to have a piece of that part of the park at home, you can check it out. It's 32auctions.com/FBSP. And again, that auction starts Monday. So again, just want to thank you for hosting this conversation today. And I'm really, really thrilled to see this story being told in such a big, powerful way.
Thank you, Aaron, so much for calling in. Aaron, the executive director of Friends of Baxter State Park. Andrew, you want, if people have read Lost on a Mountain in Maine once, twice, several times, seen Don Fendler speak, you want to be clear that this is not going to be scene by scene exactly the story you're familiar with, right?
It's not, but I would still say, and I think Ryan would agree with me, that's about 90% accurate and true to the real events. And again, that archival footage in the movie that is used sparingly but wisely, I'd like to say myself, is there to ground the film and remind audiences that this actually happened and that these details are true. So yeah, but I think what we're doing again is we are carrying the torch for Don's message for generations to come. And I think the movie captures that ethos.
All right. We'll go to, go ahead, Michael. Oh, Ryan, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ryan.
Sorry. Yeah. To jump off of that point, I just, you know, I think one of the reasons why we use the documentary footage in the movie is to support the fact that there are so many incredible things that happened. You know, if it wasn't for having the 16mm footage or having Ruth Fendler talk about, you know, the two canoes meeting at the end of the movie, you would think that's something that was made up for, you know, cinematic, you know, effect in a movie. But the fact is the matter that Don and his mother really did meet in the middle of the river in two canoes. So we use a lot of the archival footage to support moments in the movie like that, that otherwise people may not believe is true. But I think, you know, to Andrew's point, one of the really exciting things that we got to do in this film was expand beyond the book. And when I expand, I don't mean, you know, just making things up. I mean, the book obviously tells Don's story and what he went through, but there was so much incredible, so many incredible things that happened in the outside world between the searchers and people of the state of Maine and the country really looking on and looking for inspiration in this, that to be able to tell those pieces of the story is super exciting for us. And I think that the audiences will really enjoy it.
I think you did a great job with it.
Thank you.
And that's Michael.
Yes.
We should also mention, we mentioned Ruth, the mother, and Andrew, that part is played by Caitlin Fitzgerald, who's from Maine.
I couldn't think of a better synergy than that. She wanted to do it. You know, we talked to a lot of actresses, but when I talked to her, she's like, I want to do this. You know, like it just made sense. And I think she captures, Michael, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think she really captures Ruth's essence. And she, you know, she, we wanted to portray a mother that was strong and had agency and reminded me of the women in my life, like my grandmother and my mother and my aunts. And she was incredible. Just incredible. People will love this performance.
Yes, I think that absolutely, Caitlin captured the essence of my grandmother. My grandmother was very tough. She had 6 children and packed a lot of them up and drove all the way to Maine in the summer times to Newport and took care of them most of the summer and kept the boys from beating each other up too badly.
We are talking about the upcoming movie Lost on a Mountain in Maine. We're going to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. The true story, Lost on a Mountain in Maine, has captivated people since it happened in 1939, and now a movie tells the tale to new audiences. It comes out this weekend. Joining me for this hour, Don Fendler's nephew, Michael Fendler, and two of the filmmakers with Lost on a Mountain in Maine, director Andrew Boodoo, Keitlinger, and project champion Ryan Cook. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. We'll go to Susan, who's calling from Freiburg. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Jennifer, for doing this show. And congratulations, Ryan and Andrew. I'm sorry I'm getting emotional, but it's been years I've heard about this project from your mother, Ryan. I hope, hello, Debbie, if you're listening. But congratulations, and I can't wait to see the film. I've read the book years ago when your mom gave it to me, Ryan. And I can't wait to see it at the Magic Lantern Theater in Bridgeton. Also, the news about your movie has traveled to Namibia because your mom's best friend, my sister, is the Peace Corps director there. So I have told her about that, and I'm sure she'll be waiting for the live stream to be able to watch it in Africa. So congratulations again, and I'm just sorry that Don Fendler is not here to see it. Thank you for joining the show, Michael.
Susan, thank you so much for calling in. Ryan, you've had a little of this, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's that was really emotional. I have to say, I mean, two things. One, yes, I, a lot of people have known about this project being in the works for a long time. I had a message on Facebook a couple years ago before we had actually announced that we were making the movie. And somebody said, like, I was a fifth grader when I heard that you were making this movie, and now I'm applying to law school. Like, are you ever going to get this thing done? You know, so there was a lot of pressure and it was a lot of weight, especially after on my shoulders. That I felt, especially after Don passed, not only for his legacy, but for the people of Maine. And so I have certainly had the support of, as you can tell, my family and my friends through this whole process that believed that this project would come to fruition, but also the people of Maine. And no matter where I went, everybody, believed that we would get here. And like I said, I often thought about Don, and it's sort of the motto, one step at a time and you'll get there, and excited that we're here.
Susan, thanks for your call. We'll go to Patrick, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, Patrick, go ahead.
Good morning. I want to stress one aspect of Don's story that you cited earlier in the program, and that is that you should never go into the woods unprepared. I've done Outward Bound and know all about safety, and I went into the woods of Katahdin and had my own misadventure. I am curious about why the film was not shot in Maine. I know that film incentives are a hot topic, and I just wanted to get the filmmaker's take on that.
Sure. So, you know, trust me, there's no, I would love, as a Mainer, grew up in Maine, I'd love to have a shot in Maine. And we talked about it for a while. And what we ultimately decided is we looked at the math. And as an independent movie, being able to get a 40% tax credit in shooting in New York, which the equivalent for us, you know, we're a low budget movie, but we still spent millions of dollars to make the film. That's what it costs these days, is that we looked at it and said, okay, by shooting in New York, we have an extra $2 million to put towards the making of this movie, which means we can have the caliber of actors that we need. We can have the amount of the equipment and the crew to go film. And so for us, it was always, at the end of the day, what are people going to watch? And they're gonna see the product that's up on the screen, and we want to give them the best product possible. And by filming in a different state with a tax incentive, gave us the resources to be able to do that. However, I will say we did shoot in Maine for a week after we shot our, we call it principal photography, which is most of the scenes with the actors, you know, having dialogue back and forth with each other. We came, Andrew and I, with a small group of guys, came to Maine for a week. And I will tell you, the most beautiful shots in the movie are shots from Maine. And when you watch the movie, you will see anything where you see stunning visuals, that's all stuff from Maine. And we took great care for a week shooting up in and around Baxter State Park to make sure that we captured the real essence of the mountain. So we felt like we bridged the gap in a way that would do justice to Don's story in the long run.
And I would like to challenge, I probably shouldn't do this because now people are going to do it, but I'd like to challenge anybody to really, I feel like the main footage is so overpowering in the movie in a good way. You know, New York Center kind of just like fades into the ether. Like we, and I'm not supposed to talk about too much of this, but we climbed Katahdin and filmed in bad weather. Like we were immersive. We immersed ourselves in the Don Fendler of it all, going to Baxter State Park. We have helicopter shots of Baxter State Park, which is very rare. So all the beauty in the film is Maine infused. And to me, it feels like a Maine movie. It really does. Like we made sure that we went up there and shot and captured the essence of the state. And I think we did.
Having been on Katahdin, I can't imagine how challenging that was to have a film crew with all that equipment on the mountain.
We were
the hardest yeah. thing I've ever done.
we left at 3:30 in the morning. We got back at 9:30 at night. We were carrying 65-pound packs with camera gear. It was in the rain. It was intense, but you know, all the while we thought like, okay, we're doing the thing that that needs to be done to make this movie as epic as possible, so that people, when people watch it on the big screen, it feels like the world that I know and love. Listen, I've been to Katahdin, you know, almost every year since I was 10 years old. I know what it's like up there, and I wanted to make sure that we were capturing that on screen.
All right. Well, thank you, Patrick, for calling in. We'll go to Jim Ryan calling in from Newcastle, New Hampshire. Hi, Jim. Go ahead. Jim, are you there?
How are you doing? Yeah, I am. Sorry. I was listening to the show on the phone. Yeah, I just wanted to express how excited I am to see this movie finally get made. You know, all my life I heard about it. My dad, Arthur Ryan, is one of the fellows who went up and helped get Don back. He's in the YouTube video, you know, the archival footage of it. But I don't know that I've met many of my cousins. I was born late into the family, so I don't really, I've met Patsy and of course Ruth, but most of the others, I unfortunately never got to meet Don. So I just kind of wanted to call in as one of the members of the extended family, let you know how excited I am to see this finally being made.
Michael?
I think you'll absolutely like it. I'm sorry, I always thought of him as Uncle Artie, and I used to see him when we visited my grandparents in Rye, New York, when I was a little kid. But as time went on, we saw each other far less, and he kind of drifted into the past, I'm sorry to say.
Jim, thanks for calling in. We'll go to Peg, who's calling from Vienna. Hi, Peg. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having this. I enjoyed most all of your programs, but I am sitting here this morning with the Maine Atlas and Gazetteer in my lap, looking at Katahdin, which of course falls on the crack between page 50 and 51, and I'm trying to figure out what Don's path was, how he got from where he was lost to where he was found on a map.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, Peg, if you have the book Lost on a Mountain of Maine, right in the middle of it, there is a map. It's not an exact topographical map by any nature. But Ryan, you're a Mainer. You know what she's talking about when you talk about the Gazetteer. How would you describe the area? It's not an area with lots of trails, is it?
No, I mean the basic. If you're looking at a topographic map of Katahdin, is, you know, he eventually came into the Wissatucket River, and he came, if you fall from the peak of Baxter Peak down to where the Saddle Trail meets on the plateau, and instead of going down the Saddle Trail down into Chimney Pond, which is where Roy Dudley was that night, he went the other way and off the backside of the mountain into the Klondike. Which the Klondike is the watershed, the beginning watershed of the Wissatucket River. And it is also known as the gnarliest, as one of the searchers in our movie, one of the real searchers that we have archival footage of, says it's a bog at 2,000 feet, and it's about the nastiest place in the state of Maine. And that's where Don went into, is into the Klondike, and that eventually feeds into, that's the watershed of the Wissatucket River. And if you follow that watershed around the mountain and then down to the East Branch, you can pretty much follow his exact path.
Peg, thanks for your question. I'm going to go to one more clip from that interview we did in 2011 on Maine Watch with Don Fendler. In this case, we were talking about what this meant, this whole thing means to him, and about his impact on Maine.
I'll never understand why it's become the story that it's become over the years. I think I'm finally getting around to begin to realize how much it means to the people in Maine, because they can relate to it. Maine are outdoors people. They know the woods, and that type of thing. They're hunters, they're campers, they're fishermen. And if somebody like me gets lost in the woods and not prepared, they know exactly what's going to happen to that individual. And luckily, I came out of it alive, but they could relate to it. And so now I think I begin to understand why it means so much to the state of Maine and how much it means to me.
Andrew, what are you thinking listening to that?
Emotional, to be honest. Like, I'm kind of verklempt, as they'd say. I just hope that this story, I don't know. That really got me. It seriously did. It really did. It's so bittersweet that I never met him, but that I hear that. And I just hope that this movie encourages kids to keep reading the book, encourages people to aspire to hold on and hang on. And when times are tough, persevere. You know, that's why people love this story. That's why it endures. And I hope this movie just gets to be a little part of that legacy.
I want to jump off of that thought, because I will tell you two things. One, it did always blow my mind that even later in life, Don was like, I don't know why people make such a big story of this. And I think the more time we spent together, and I think that just tells you about his mindset. One of the reasons Don was who he was, he's just like, oh, it's not a big deal, I'm going to keep going, right? But I will tell you that I think Don's right there, but there's more to it. I think he's right that the people of Maine obviously can connect to it. They know what it's like to be in the woods, but there's something more. And I witnessed it at an event with Don, and actually Lynn was there as well. We were at the Lewiston Public Library, and there was a long line of people talking, you know, whatnot. And there was a gentleman at the end of the line that was in his late 20s and looked a little disheveled and not your typical Don Fendler fan. And people come up to Don all the time. It's like, I'm fighting through cancer. I'm, you know, going through this battle in my life. And this young man told Don, I had just come back from Afghanistan. I was in the military and he was having a hard time. And he told Don that he read his book almost every day, and it gave him hope that he can get through the hardship that he's facing in his life. And I think that's an underestimated thing that people don't realize, is that people really look at this story and think, if a 12-year-old kid can get through what he went through by just taking it one step at a time, I can fight through whatever hardship I'm fighting through in my life. And I think that's a really powerful message, that if we could all revert to our 12-year-old selves and think like a 12-year-old, that whatever hardship we're facing in our lives, that one step at a time, we can get through it as well.
All right. Well, that's good. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, and I think Don's humility is, I think, is part of what makes him appealing and what makes the story appealing. And I hope the movie also just captures that essence, that there's something to that, right?
And Michael, we're out of time, but you would agree, right?
I agree. And I think that Ryan and Andrew and the whole team did such a fabulous job with the movie. I hope everybody listening has an opportunity to see it. It's just great. And on behalf of my family, I want to congratulate them on doing an excellent job.
Well, thank you all for joining us. The voice you just heard, Michael Fendler, Don Fendler's nephew, Ryan Cook, a producer who has worked for more than a decade to produce this movie, Lost in a Mountain in Maine, and Andrew Boodoo Keitlinger, director of the film. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the show, it's Halloween, so we're going to hear about witches, the history of witches in New England, and what modern-day witches believe. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.